From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And today on the show, we have Dr. Armando Gonzalez. I call him Dr. Armando, and he is a, he's kind of like a therapist, but he's a sports performance enhancement coach. But he also works with executives and CEOs and entrepreneurs, and he knows how to help us win. He's going to share his story today on the show. We're going to get some insight on how he does it, his methodology, and I think we're going to have a few good takeaways. But before we get to that, I want to bring up my Jay Ezell question of the week. And the question really, because if we have some success and we want to extract some value out of our company, like we sell our company or get a big payday at some level, we got to have the plan and we got to get the questions right. Jay Ezell is the expert on helping people plan when they're getting ready to sell their business. You got to have a plan before you get into those scenarios. And the question is, what are my cash flow needs and what are my aspirational goals? We got to get that question right.
Entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy. They take the risks, create the opportunities, and move the molecules. Now, back to the Marquee Media Studio, it's the Mark Haney Show.
What are my cash flow needs, and what are my aspirational goals?
Sure. Yeah. So there's two parts, and I think that's, we talk a lot about qualitative and quantitative discussions. And as a math nerd, you know, those are important as we think through the idea of, you know, if I've got X amount of capital now and I know that I have to live, right? I've got to have, even if I don't owe anybody anything, which is always a good goal to have, but you've got obligations you've got to meet, lifestyle, travel, property taxes, whatever it might be. So we've got to think through not just the cash flow planning of how do we generate an efficient rate of return from income to support my lifestyle moving forward, but also aspirational goals. And why that's important is as we think through all the pieces of planning, there might be something, if I'm charitably inclined, as I know you are, thinking through the exercise and idea of, well, how do I now execute on that value system that I have now with a different capital position? How do I most efficiently execute on that? And so there might be pre-transaction planning that occurs to where maybe there's a family foundation that's set up. And that can then execute through my aspirational goals of giving back to my community, supporting an ecosystem that's important to me. That's all part of, you know, the overall exercise of going through, you know, the exit process and then thinking through what does life look like for me.
I'm rising up from the ground, from the bottom. Can't hold me down, hold me down. I'm rising.
Entrepreneurship is a full contact sport. It's not for the timid. It's not for the cowards. Only the strong survive. And now, back to the Marquee Media Studio, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Dr. Mondo is in the house. I have been looking forward to this interview since you made me cry over in our Roseville Venture Lab a couple months back. You asked some question. You got up and spoke and got us really engaged, and then you brought a few of us up to say a few words, and you must have asked some question that made me feel vulnerable, and I started talking about my team and I started bawling. So you're here in the house.
I think it was about your passion, yeah, and your purpose into why you do what you do, and kind of like the moment. I can't remember the specifics of it, but it was around that thread, and I think it showed me in that moment, like that was a moment for me of you being vulnerable was what drew me into to be on this podcast. It's like, I have to know that people have that gear really in order for me, just because I'm so always operating on the depths of the bottom of the ocean in terms of, you know, getting into the heart and the guts of things, that knowing that you have that gear to you, I'm like, all right, man, this is a guy I want to roll with.
Well, I also went to Oakmont High School. And that's another thing. You're an Oakmont guy. And so there, we probably got a lot in common. We have friends that are involved with the Tennessee Titans. And
that's right.
So there's a lot. But let's make sure our audience knows you a little bit of your background. You're coming in you don't look like what I would think of as a doctor.
That's intentional.
And that's very disarming. And so, but maybe just give us a little bit of your background and what is it that you do? Because I know you're changing a lot of lives.
Thank you. I mean, I think at the core basis, what I feel like I'm put on this earth to do is to empower people, love on people, help invite people into living out the reason that they were put on this earth. I believe everyone's got a purpose and a calling. I believe everyone's equipped with strengths that are within them that maybe they need to, show up every day and put the work in, but they'll eventually unlock. And so I try to just help give them a vision of what it would look like to live that life out. And, doing that has had many different titles. And over the years, I find that the easiest thing to describe really when people ask, what do? Is just the fact that I help people. And that's what I've been put on this earth to do. I remember as a kid going up to strangers. I remember distinctly going up to strangers as a kid and just hugging them. Not sure why. It perplexed more of the people I was hugging than anything. But that is me at my core. And so, the through line for me has always been that. I have a doctorate of psychology in marriage and family therapy. Was a professor right after getting that in my early 30s, and was in the academic world. I also was a chaplain for some time, going into juvenile hall and spending time with young kids, a lot of which were in the max unit, so they had some very significant sentences. But everything has that through line, no matter what I do, whether it's speaking, training, workshops, whatever. It's just this through line of really trying to just connect with the heart of people. And I think that in today's world right now, the reason that I'm able to jump from one industry to the next, or, all these different niches, is because there's such a rampant need in this culture for what I do. And I think it just puts me in a really unique spot to get the opportunity to do just really amazing things.
One of the things that I think leaped out at me when I met you is your approach to helping people. A lot of love in there, but when we think about going to a therapist or a psychiatrist or a psychologist or whatever, it's because we're sick or we got some problems, we need to deal with them. But you actually help good people get great, or great people get really freaking good. And that, to me, so you're working with high level athletes, CEOs, people that are at the very top of their game, and helping them get even to, I guess, closer to their full potential.
Yeah, because when you get to that point, we're entrusted with territory, right? We're entrusted with resources. We're entrusted with these things. And the only way that we'll expand that territory is if we take good care of those things. So when you're in a position like a CEO or like some of these, these really high level athletes that I work with, that their ability to make an impact really can be, do you want to impact 100 lives? Do you want to impact 1 million lives? And sometimes that's just literally carving out a little part of your day now a little bit differently, because the platform is already there. It's built into, all of your accolades and accomplishments. So it's helping people see too, that when they get to that point, a lot of times they've gotten to the end of the rope in terms of what, money and success can give you. And you realize there's more. And I think that for so many of us, we're not going to ever be fulfilled unless we're truly feeling like we have a bigger purpose, whether that's legacy driven, whether that's giving back. And so, again, I think that a lot of these folks I work with are in a position where they've wanted to be great because they're competitive. They wanted to be great because they're good at what they do. They're different in those ways. But what I want to challenge them to is, at a certain point, I'll give you an example. I worked with a Major League Baseball player, won some MVPs, and, I was talking to the mutual friend that introduced us and said, look, in order to get him to leave his house, it's going to take a lot. Because think about it. The guy has money. He's paid one of the biggest contracts in professional sports. It's going to take a lot to motivate him to leave the house. I think at a certain point, once we've got all the awards, all the accolades, this person's great. Now what? To settle for a life now of just, okay, well, I'm retiring early at the age of 36 and just, that's not going to be enough. So what's the next mountain to climb? And I think that the work that I do challenges people to look at their lives in a greater perspective and say, okay, why am I here? What am I doing with this influence, these resources I've been trusted with? And that's how I find that you can motivate someone like a Lindsey Vonn, who has, you know, literally, you know, traversed every mountain and now is at a point in her life where she's transitioning out of that and feels like she has no identity, and challenging her to say that it's not so much, you could throw yourself into 100 things and be great because that's just who you are. You're that driven. No matter what, I put you in a bowling tournament.
She was in the Olympics, World Skiing Championships.
And yeah, stuff. Yeah. Considered possibly, you know, I shouldn't say this. Not considered, she is. Because if just on the off chance she's listening, she is the greatest skier of all time. Lindsey, that's you. You are her. But yeah, you know, but how do you then at that point in your life, you feel like life in a sense is almost over because that was your purpose. So challenging her to say, look, you could go and create this feeling like you're accomplishing something, but don't mistake, you know, movement for progress in terms of actually making the sort of impact that you want to make. Let's take some time. Let's pull over a little bit and look at your life in a very deep way that's going to scare you, that's going to inspire you, that's going to touch you, that's going to invite healing. It's going to also invite the thing you want more than anything, which is to level up. It's going to invite you to level up. But when you get back on the road, you're still going to go do those things. You're still going to go start those businesses. You're going to speak places, but you'll do it with a different intent. And that intent will be impact. And I think that's the thing that I really challenge those folks with, because you get to a certain point and if I've gotten every accolade, well, then what am I motivated for? And I think the motivation truly comes from purpose, and it's got to be in service to someone other than yourself.
Interesting. I was nowhere near, not even close to being, a Lindsey Vonn or, a professional, athlete or anything like that. But I sold my companies and thought that I had some amount of, reasonable amount of success. And I left and I was sort of stuck in that spot for a bit too. One of the things, I have it over my wall over there, because I was telling somebody the story the other day, I decided I wanted to write a mission statement. I thought that would be a good idea. And have you ever heard of an Ikigai?
Mm-mm.
Okay, it's kind of like where you find your calling. It's like, what are you good at? What do you love? What can you get paid for? And what does the world need? And if you can find that intersection, wow, then you basically have discovered your Ikigai. So I did that little exercise to help me create a mission statement. And
that's cool.
When you made me cry the other day, I described a little bit of the story of struggling to turn what I'm doing into a thing. And now I feel like I've gotten there with the Growth Factory and the Backyard Advantage. But even after the Ikigai, even after the mission statement, it was pretty difficult to, I guess, really lock on in a way where I knew. Now I feel like I do, but it took, that was about 10 years ago. So it took like 6 or 7 years to get there. Now, Lindsey, where is she at in this journey of finding her, what she's going to pivot into?
Yeah, she's, she is now at a point where she's living it. When I first met her, I guess it was, and I'm able to speak about a lot of this because part of one of the titles I left out is transitioning more into the role of less of therapy, more life coaching, and then having clients in that realm also, even if they're therapy clients, it's up to them. They hold the confidentiality. If they want to go tell the world about it, they can. I technically can't.
Yeah.
Coaching works a little different. Lindsey wrote about it in her book, so she's kind of put it all out there. So I feel like I can tell her story a little bit. But yeah, Lindsey to me is the type of woman that not may, she will take over whatever room she's in, not in a commandeering sort of way, but it's just people are drawn to her. And now she's putting herself in the rooms that she always was in, that she's been in all along, but she's positioning herself differently because before she felt like she was just the athlete. Now when she's in those rooms with billionaires, entrepreneurs, investors, people that are creating policy change. Those are always the people that Lindsey felt like she was the trophy athlete that was just on, but now she feels like she belongs in those rooms and she's taking and that's a result of her inner work. Our stuff mm-hmm. was a part of it.
Now she's confident as an impact player outside of, the slopes.
That's it. Right. And so now she's You know, she's trusting her instincts and her gut more, and she's acting with swag and confidence in the business realm and continuing to make massive moves and continuing to become an in-demand speaker. And it's kind of like she's found out, wow, I thought my world was over. The world's actually my oyster. So it's fascinating to again, see that. And I think to your story too, like your story is a great point of what I believe in that you conquered that first mountain. And then you had that moment at the bottom of the mountain, which can at times be dark and cold and it's not as, you can't see as much cool stuff. Right. And then you go, well, dang, what, I got to climb another mountain. And, you know, I think first of all, that's human beings, because if we don't have something to drive us every day to get up, we'll flounder, right? We all know that. And especially those of us that are driven to be entrepreneurs, because, you know, we don't do anything halfway, right? So it's like, if we're at the bottom of the mountain, I'm either going to set up camp and just relax and camp by this creek and just, you know, read books all day, or I'm going to climb the next mountain. But what mountain would motivate me the same way that previous one did? And I think it's interesting, because I walk into this place and you could see that, you know, you took exactly what I'm talking about. You took your platform and you made that next mountain, not simply, you know, doing 10 more of the other mountains, but creating something different that's scalable, that creates impact, that gives back, that leaves a legacy. And I think, as I could see here, just the energy you bring, obviously it's fulfilling to you.
It is. I enjoy it. The name of your organization is Cheat Code. And I know you have a foundation that we can get into too, if you want to talk about that. But you talked about I love the name, by the way. It's like you've got the a way to, you have the elixir. So you talked about purpose and finding our purpose. Okay, check that. I got it. So what else goes into this elixir?
Man, yeah, that's a great question, because there's a lot of things. And it's funny. The only analogy I've ever had is to this is, I've never sat with someone that's an elite gamer, but I guess if you ask them, man, how'd you do that move? You're like, they're like, I don't know. I just, my fingers knew what buttons to push. Creating Cheat Code, which is, we have, again, the C Corp, and then we also have a 501c3, the foundation. Creating those entities has forced me to actually know how to answer that question. Because for a long time, I don't know what I'm doing, man. I have no clue. But when you start having people come alongside you from the business world, and that's how my story started, was that I had, you know, someone that introduced me to the athletes. His name is Jimmy Spencer. He's my best friend, godfather to my kids. And he runs LeBron James's media company. He was employee number one at Uninterrupted. And that's what got him in that world. That's what got me into that world. I had him, and I had another one of his friends, Matthew Stern, come in and become, with a huge business background, come in and basically say, we need to figure out, you're doing a lot of good stuff, but there's only one of you. And you keep getting burnt out every so often because you drive yourself into the ground and never say no because you love this stuff. That's not sustainable. But also too, the impact isn't big enough. So how do we make it bigger? And that's when we started Cheat Code. And in terms of what goes into that, you know, we created an academy where we can actually train people. It's a 3-month program. We can train people to do what I do. I'm a big believer that what I do is not the real sauce. Like the sauce is constantly changing, that if I came here 2 years later, I better have new practices, because my stuff's always evolving. We constantly learn new stuff about the brain. You know, today I'm practicing techniques that are based in the whole body, neurophysiology, like brain spotting. That's a huge piece of the elixir that we use. Dr. David Grand created that theory and that practice. It's used a lot with trauma.
Is that where you examine the brain?
Well, no. I told David, I said, look, if there's any way you can go back, David named this thing like it was an indie band. He never had the foresight to know that it was going to go this far. David, we got to do something about the name, man. Every time I mention it to someone, they think I'm putting it's always that.
Brain spotting. Yeah. I'm like, brain scan.
To him, it makes the most sense in the world, because he's scientific, and he's like, no, you don't understand. It makes so much sense. Anyway, I don't love the name. In many, many ways, I think that's part of what made me have to call it something different, like a cheat code, and create and add all these additives to it. But yeah, brain spotting is essentially, it evolved from EMDR, which is another therapeutic technique that allows people to essentially get out of the frontal lobe, which is where most of talk therapy happens. You know, like right now we're using the frontal lobe, we're thinking, you know, critical thinking, great things that only humans can do. And that's what makes us great, right? We can critically think. But what lays beyond that and where a lot of the trauma lies is actually in a somatic tie to our bodies. And so in order to release the trauma, you have to also release the feeling in the body, which sounds wild, but that's, you know, that's a technique that was used predominantly with traumatized folks. And it was helping people almost come back to life overnight using these techniques. It helped them get once again, out of a state of dysregulation and back to a state of regulation where they're actually in their bodies, not living in survival brain. And David also is a huge, you know, has huge passion for sports. And so David worked with a lot with athletes and actors, another passion of his. And he used these techniques that he was using to almost like zero in on a trauma and help someone release a trauma and get that out of their system, to get out of that behavioral loop. He started using that as a performance enhancement tool as well, to help people either get out of things that were getting them stuck in competition or performance. But then also too, where it's evolved into, and Lisa Larson, who's local here, doing expansion work, and where we can take someone, and I can say to an athlete, okay, you know, everyone talks about in the zone, flow state, whatnot. It's, you know, what if I could take your brain and train your brain to operate in flow state more? What if you could feel flow state more vividly when you're in it? That's essentially what brain spotting allows me to do. It's one of many tools that Cheat Code uses, but it's the one that, you know, when rubber meets the road, like for example, week 17 of the NFL season, the Titans are on a massive slide of a losing streak, all these injuries, backups, and they're playing Jacksonville. The winner of that game is going to go to the playoffs and win the division. The Titans have won the division for a number of years. This is not how we saw the season going. We're in the locker room. Vrabel's giving his pregame speech over there, and I get a knock on the room that I'm in because I'm in there with a star defensive lineman doing these techniques to get him primed up and into a place where he feels invincible, confident, at peace with himself, mm-hmm. and, you know, instinctual, all the things that he wants to feel prior to the game. So brain spotting is a powerful tool. It can be used to help people heal from trauma. Could also be used to help people curate these feeling states that they want to produce. And then what I try to do is strategize with them on how can we take that in and put that into places in your life. So for the defensive lineman, his job's pretty simple. Every play, attack. But now to the middle reliever that I'm working with, or the starting pitcher in baseball, you know, it's different because he's going to want to look at having a more nuanced mindset that he wants to be in. He wants to be able to think clearly like a chess player. He wants to be confident, calm within himself. He doesn't want to get too high, too low, just that sweet spot. So again, my training with him then becomes around, let me work with you in our sessions, but also give you training regimens that allow you to get to that place more often, repeatably, because the brain can be trained in these ways. We've known that forever with classical conditioning, but now we actually have tools that can train it. And so that's what Cheat Code's about. It's not so much one technology or one technique, but more whatever is producing optimal, excellent results. It's my job. That's what I tell the athletes, is it's my job to know about it. And if I don't know about it, I'm failing you.
Okay, so let me see if I can dive into this a little bit. So pregame, whether you're a quarterback or a defensive lineman, you want to be in flow state, got it. So what do you do at that time to get me there? Because that's, you know, I can't have you, every time I get up to speak, I can't have you come out and get me in flow state before every podcast, right? So what would you do if it was the podcast of my life, which everyone I guess should be,
right?
And then what are these regimens look like?
Yeah.
You know, so they can like do it myself.
Yeah. So there's another part that we include in here too, which is when I started working with athletes, a lot of what I just described to you, athletes wouldn't go for a number of reasons. One, it sounds fluffy. It sounds airy. You know, one of the challenges that I had to do, even with that MVP that I mentioned earlier, was, you know, sitting in the living room of his house, tell him, well, what's the deal, man? Are you trying to level up or not? You know, have that kind of that challenge to the entrepreneur, that challenge to the athlete, that challenge to them. What is it going to look like? Then, and then engaging in the actual work, creating a system that they can follow. So I create a document that's proprietary to Cheat Code called My Cheat Code, where I can, it's essentially the Bible on you. Okay. And it's going to help us understand every bit of the things that we know we need to address over time in related to healing in
that
your story.
That could be something I'm guilty, feel guilty about. Yeah, you said trauma. So maybe I got my butt kicked and now I, or whatever, you know, a failure in my life.
Yeah, it's showing up. We all have it. Because this is the thing. I mean, the way I'm talking about trauma is pretty expansive in this idea that everyone's got little, you know, minor T's that occurred in their life. And when we feel like we can't express ourselves or we can't be instinctual or we can't just be creative and say any idea, if over time life is constantly pushing that out of us, we're going to see that when we try to do that with a goal that we have in life, we're going to have limitations we run into. I try to find those limitations, reverse engineer back from them. How do I help you get to the root of what's causing that to help you release that so that you're no longer getting stuck in that pattern any longer? So we create this document, it's My Cheat Code, all your healing goals, all your level up goals, lots of different assessments to help you understand yourself, because that's really important too. And then when it comes to that, so we have all that work that predated that moment, mm-hmm. right? So we've done this, you really feel like you understand yourself, everything is really clear. And then we've targeted for you, like, you know, that moment of peeling back the onion. Maybe we did that in a session where you said, you know, it's this feeling I get. And then you narrow down what that feeling is. It's this feeling of being on fire. It's this feeling of being passionate. I feel it in my chest. I feel it in my body. I feel it. It's finding what that is and then saying, okay, in a session, let me help you really get to that place, spend a good amount of time there, let you expand.
And that's a good, you get them to a good place. Is that correct? Okay, sorry to interrupt you. Yeah. I just want to make sure
if that's the goal. Yeah. If the goal is to remove a block, then it's, you know, getting them to a spot where they may, the way to it is through it. So actually feeling that pain as a way of releasing it. But in terms of the leveling up, if I got to get you ready for your best podcast, then what I'm going to do is if I'm in front of you, I'm going to spend that 20 minutes to 40 minutes just basically taking you through all of the keywords that I heard you say to me in our interactions of times when you were under the influence of that feeling, right? So when you're on that feeling, if that bliss, whatever that is, that fire is your word. When you're on fire, you say you think like this, you say you feel this, you say, I'm going to say it to you while you have music on you. That music's bilateral. It pans from one ear to the other, which helps induce your state, your brain state to get into a deeper state.
Okay, so I have some headphones on or earbuds or whatever.
You're listening to music. Yeah, and if we're doing level up.
And it's your music, you've got. Listening to one of my favorite songs from back in the day.
Yeah, it's our music. That's a whole other, you know, story of how that came to be. And we use a local artist for our level up stuff, who's an amazing artist, the Philharmonic, who's produced, he's getting ready to release Level Up Volume 2, which comes out, and it'll be in the ears of all these athletes around the country.
Okay, so you got the music to have you in the mood.
You get the
music. Now you're talking, and are you asking questions, or are you...
It's really, let me focus on that feeling that you have when that fire comes about you. You know, you told me, Mark, that there was a time back in 2018, now I'm going back for my notes, 2018, where you felt that. You walked into this room, and immediately, you almost lost yourself in the moment, and the fire took over. And when the fire took over, it made you feel this way, that way. You're listening to the music. That music is helping your brain go subcortical. So you're actually getting into the deeper regions of your brain where a lot of your subconscious can start to allow you to, if you want to, you can swim in that a bit. And what it will do is your brain will start processing and showing you other times you felt that way. It'll increase the feeling. It's building stronger neural connections using this technique. Now, it's the music. Yes, it's part of it. Second piece is you have a strong relationship, hopefully with me, to where you feel safe and comfortable going where I'm guiding you to go. Always following you more than leading, though. I'm kind of like knowing where you want to go and I'm leading you a little further. And then the third part of it is where you look affects how you feel. And this was what David Grand credits all of Brain Spotting's advancements to, is that he worked with ophthalmologists that helped us realize that And again, David will explain it. I'm much more of the guy in the trenches. So forgive me if I get this wrong, David. But, you know, he will say that if you ask someone that feeling of being on fire, do you feel it more when you look straight ahead, to the left, to the right? That's just a simple litmus test. You will find that one of those positions, you feel it more.
Oh, interesting.
And again, you will also find in a similar way, and this is how he discovered it, that people, when they talk about something that's particularly painful, for example, they will look in a certain direction almost every time, because that it's looking in that direction that helps our brain access the information. So what David did with brain spotting is he helped us say this bilateral music helps get people into a subcortical state where they can access their subconscious, which allows us to get to the root of where everything is in the body and in the brain. The therapeutic relationship is that of love and positive regard, not judgment. It's collaborative. It feels safe. And then the third part of the frame that makes it is where you look affects how you feel. So for 20 to 40 minutes, we would have you pick a spot. It could be that, you know, that O right over there on that stand. Mm-hmm. And you would, by staring at that O, your brain would start to drift off. And we do this naturally too, right? Like we'll just gaze off sometimes in the distance. We're processing. So we're harnessing a naturally occurring process, but we're saying, what if I intentionally gazed over in that direction? What if I intentionally brought the fire to my body? What if I intentionally took it with the music?
A lot of subtleties in this.
And it just starts to build. And I'm always looking at it with, what's the next thing I can add? You know, so I studied with a musicologist who produced our first album, Time to Heal, Volume 1 and 2. And she explained to me and taught to me how, you know, music can be, instruments can essentially operate at different frequencies, and those frequencies can produce feeling states. So I'm always looking at, this is just kind of how I approach everything. We're getting deep on the music, deep on the process, but that's my mindset and my approach is, okay, I want a little more. How can I do a little more? How can I get people there a little faster? How can I get them after 20 minutes to slam that down and go, holy shit. I feel like I can run through a wall. I feel so excited, so powerful. And then how do I get other people to notice it? That's my true litmus test. If I get other coaches coming up to me in Tennessee and going, hey, you've been working with Chig, man. What's going on with him?
Oh, wow.
I don't know. He looks faster. He looks more efficient out there. He's not looping on stuff anymore. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, yeah, it's because we finally dealt with the issue of why he was looping on that, because you remind him of a parental figure. And every time you scowl at him, it triggers his body to go into survival mode. And he loops on perfectionism or tries to impress you or tries to, and he loses himself. But now he's free from that because we got to the root and removed it. And now when he's out there, he's in flow state. He's playing for something that's bigger than himself. And he's finding that the more he does that and the more he does the work, the more he starts to level up.
Is breathing a part of the approach, like a certain type of breathing?
Yeah.
We do that in yoga, we do it in sometimes in team meetings to get ourselves, I guess, clear, you know, yes. Grounded.
Absolutely. It's a remote control. I'm breathing experts. I've worked with Laird Hamilton and his team, with one of the athletes that I was working on a project with, and learned a lot from them. And that's what they say, you know, your breath is a remote control to your emotional state if you want it to be, if you train it to be. So these are all, you know, breathing is another cheat code. In this particular setup, to answer your question though, we let the breath do what it wants to.
Okay.
So, you know, we will remind people sometimes to breathe if they're not breathing, but for the most part, it's kind of like because you'll see, I can feel when the release happens. Like I don't have to even ask a question, because a lot of times you're staring at that O and I might not even check in with you because so much of the processing is happening in your mind. What's coming up for you now, Mark? What do you notice now? Okay, go a little further with it. Let's see what happens now. Don't be afraid. That was just a younger version of you. You did the best you could, right? Compassion, love, positive regard helps you move through it. Anyway, I know I'm going down rabbit hole.
It's interesting to me because I'm one of the things, because I sort of have my own little cheat code with, it's not professional though, it's just what I do. And one of the things I do in the morning, and I wonder if this has any, relates anything to what you do. It's like, you know, it's not really meditation, but I have, I typed into Evernote my own little document. So I go through like these questions, you know, if the backyard advantage was to be successful, what would cause it to be successful, that type of thing. So all these different things are associated with my goals. What would be successful, all the people that I am grateful for, all the things I'm grateful for. It's this whole list of things that can put me in the mood to, you know, get me closer to that flow state, I suppose. But, you know, I look at it first thing in the morning, every morning. It's part of my, I guess, routine.
And so if we were working together, I would say you've already got, and that's the other thing too, is that, you know, I always say, you're the expert on you, man. I mean, like, you know you better than I know you. I don't care how skilled I am at doing this. You know you better than I know you. Meaning, if that's meaningful, I always go with what's meaningful.
I want to improve what I got to.
Well, your system though creates there. You know, if we went step by step, we'd probably pull out what it's doing. If we really wanted to understand it, you just know it works.
Yeah.
And yeah, if we wanted,
most of the time, if I get enough sleep.
Yeah, there you go. But if we wanted to enhance it, could we? 100%. And that's what I'd look at. How do we tweak that? What would we do? What if we add some bilateral music to that? What if we add 15 minutes of brain training into that? You know, what if we did it at a different time of day? What if, you know, those sorts of things? What if before you went to bed, I taught you how to do a 15 minute exercise that allows you to essentially close all the tabs, as Coach Vrabel calls it, you know, close the tabs before you go to bed, you know, so they're no longer running in your sleep. If I taught you how to do that, would you sleep better so that the next day you woke, you know, it's always optimization.
Well, this is great because I think, okay, so I have friends in the entrepreneurial space that are, some of them have mailed it in at some point, right? They got some success. They're just sort of riding out the success. And there's others that are, no, I am driven, like a professional athlete is likely driven. So they already have everybody's got a cheat code, but they're looking for something else. They're looking for like whatever.
That's, you know, I look at, you know, I'd say, I wouldn't always introduce him as my spirit animal, but I'll do it this time. Rick Rubin, you know, and I look at Rick Rubin, legendary producer, and I look at him and I relate a lot to him in many ways when I see him, just being himself. I just, the joy, the passion, the creativity, the idea of always what happens if this talks to the, you know, just like cross mingling of universes and seeing what happens and being curious. And, you know, there's a lot of a little kid in his spirit. And so the thing about that Rick Rubin in his recent book that he talks a lot about, that I'm borrowing a lot from both him, and then also I'm really fascinated lately with actors and how acting coaching so closely, as I've worked with actors, I find out, wait a minute, you're doing a lot of the work that we've been doing too in my world. And in terms of accessing parts of self and all those things and doing the work. But, you know, Rick Rubin basically invited me into this place of looking at what I do as a craft. And I think that is truly what I try to, lately, I've been inviting everyone I work with into this idea of, what if you just accepted that this is what you were put on this earth to do, right? Just like the carpenter every day goes, I, you know, or the contractor or whatever. Like, I'm just, this is what I do. Like, I'm really good at it. This is what I do. In the athlete world, so much pressure is constantly put on them to perform. And every day is analyzed. Every day is commented on. So it's really hard to have the craft long-term perspective. But if we look at the craft perspective, and this goes back to entrepreneurs, if we just say to ourselves, like, this is what I'm put on, like, this is who I am, then to me, every day becomes an opportunity, not about winning and losing as much, but about refining your craft and falling in love with the process. The greats that sustain success, the Nick Sabans of the world, you know, the people that really are able to, whether it's in sports or any industry, it's constantly experience success and have impact. It's because they're in love with the process. They look at what they do as a craft. And I think that because we live in a society that's so focused on the win, you know, what'd you win? What'd you get? What'd you make? What'd you earn? What was your exit? You know, all those things that we have a really hard time motivating ourselves when we're not driven towards that one thing. I think the people that fall in love with the process and go every day, you know, the process is to be not just a carpenter, but the best carpenter or the best version of myself. Those are the folks that I think end up having more long-term success. And I think that that's part of the reason why, you know, to your example, we hear some people sometimes struggling because they're only being motivated by that next mountain that they're climbing.
Interesting. So you think, I was thinking about different books and things that I've read that have helped me from time to time to become inspired. And then sometimes they kind of wears off. Like there's this guy, we're talking about professional sports. Have you ever heard of Tim S. Grover?
Yeah.
He's one of these guys that has this process. You're either, he asks you the question, or he wants you to discover whether you're a cleaner, a closer, or something else. And the cleaners are like the Michael Jordans, Kobe Bryant type guys. And then, but most of society is more below that. You may be a closer or something more average. But he's got this, and this is what I don't hear from you, which is interesting. He's got this sort of like hardcore, you know, don't be a, you know, it's kind of negative, right? There's a big, which I can, you know, sometimes I really appreciate that,
yeah.
But it doesn't help me tap into the love piece, right? You're talking about love, you know, giving people hugs as a kid, you know, that I can identify with that a little bit. And, you know, that helps me to get where I want. And the Tim S. Grover, while he's good, he wrote the book Relentless.
That's it.
And yeah, and he's great. So I started following him on Instagram, and he's just like hammering. Every time I scroll through my Instagram and see him, he's just hammering. I'm like, dude, I wasn't in the mood to be hammered on.
Well, and you know, Tim was, Jordan credits a lot of his success from Tim, but how many Jordans are there, right? Like,
yeah.
Tim's made to probably coach the Jordans of the world. And I do work with some elite people, but I just find that the reality is, you know, we always compare who's the next Jordan. They're all one of ones, and many of them are, right? The reality is, I think the approach for me, I don't use that approach. I mean, I definitely am hard on people. I'll be accountable, but I feel like I'm earning that by all the other times that I pour into them. Rules without relationship always equals rebellion. That's what Pastor Bob Balyan taught me. And it's true. You know, I think it's all about building relationship. You only build relationship through meeting people where they're at, building that relationship, and also seeing the best in them and seeing and loving on them, even if they don't know how to ask for it. Because, you know, everyone needs to be coached differently, right? And some people need more of that approach. I could tell you, I'm not that guy. I can be that guy at times, but I'm not going to be that guy 24/7. It's just not me. But for me, what I found is that this more long-term approach, because every day, if you got to motivate yourself by talking crap to yourself or hearing someone talk crap to you, to me, I don't know. There's a lot of things that I don't love about that. But again, it may work for some people. I just think that it's a pretty unique set of the population, and not everyone could take that every day.
Yeah. And he's a lot about work ethic and things, you know, the stuff that works, right? So I'm not, this is no slam Tim S. Grover.
No, David Goggins is another guy
Goggins,
like that.
And he's the other guy I was thinking of too.
I have a friend who, you know, again, will constantly send me stuff. And I just had to tell him at a certain point, look, man, like, I love this in doses. I cannot handle this every day. It crushes my spirit.
Yeah.
It does the opposite.
I got to get myself there at times rather than have somebody like
sometimes
Goggins.
It's the love and the inspiration and the joy and the other things that motivate me as well. So I think there's many ways to motivate ourselves.
Gary Vee can kind of get people there because he doesn't hammer either. I mean, he sort of gets the kindness stuff and the love stuff, even though he can be abrasive. He's a little more, I don't know, likable.
Yeah. There, and I think for me, I probably like the word that, you know, there's definitely a nurturing element to me. And I proudly wear that as a man, because I think that for a long time, men did have more nurturing characteristics, and we've lost our way a bit from that. I'm much more of a nurturer, but also at the same time, you know, I realized in my journey, I'll be 40 this year, that love is two sides of a coin. And so these extremes just to me are problematic. Even if I was extreme in the extreme nurturer and never had the ability to have my own version of Goggins or Grover, on the other side of the coin, if I didn't want to own that, then I wouldn't be as effective. There are times where we have to love someone enough to be really direct and honest with them. but we can still do it from a place of being kind and clear. Mm-hmm. We don't have to compromise that. And we actually don't have to do it the other way in order to motivate them. Sometimes just being kind and clear and honest with people, speaking to their heart, giving them an opportunity to do what they want to do with it. It's their choice. That can also work too. So I've learned over time that I may have started out more as a nurturer, but especially with these athletes, if you don't, and entrepreneurs, if you don't have the ability to call them on their stuff, I mean, Lindsay will tell you, I'll save this part, but she'll tell you when I walked into the first day, what I said to her about some things in her life. Because if I love you, and I'm really here invested in you getting to the best version of you, I do have to acknowledge those things. And I really don't love you if I'm nurturing 24/7. And I really don't love you if I'm just ragging on you 24/7. I got to be able to flip to both sides of the coin. For me, I know who I am. I'm going to always lead with that love and nurturing, because that's just true to myself.
Interesting. One of the things you said at the beginning was sort of asking the question, you know, are you committed to this, right? And I'm paraphrasing, but kind of asking your client or me, the patient, or me, the person that the CEO, is this something you really want? What do you want, and do you really want it? So, which makes, and are you willing to make the changes? And I don't know that you said that, but that's what I took out of it. Maybe I was just kind of thinking about myself. But if I can't say, yes, I want that, which means I'm going to have to drop some of this stupid stuff I'm doing, then maybe I'm not your client.
Yeah, I believe, obviously, the work I'm doing is all about change. And you have to have a tremendous amount of hope to do this work, because you have to see a vision for someone that they can't see in their current. That's why they came to you, right? I can't see it. I'm stuck. So I believe change is 1,000% possible. However, I also know that human beings are constantly drawn to comfort. We're constantly drawn to what is familiar. Therefore, I wouldn't bet on it. You know, I wouldn't bet that most people will change. I think everyone needs some level of what we're talking about in their lives. We don't have communities and organizations where we have mentorship built into quite often unless we come to a place like this. And so there, a lot of this stuff just isn't happening in our lives. But truly, we all could use it. Mm-hmm. It could help us become better versions of ourselves.
Well, I loved your metaphor of the craftsman, the craftsperson, because if you just say, it's kind of like committing to be in it for the long haul and just continuing to get better throughout your life. One of the things that I know you have a specialty in dealing with younger people, millennials, Gen Z, but do you see, when you start talking to, do you ever work with older, like I'm 60 years old, you ever work with older people? And I'm kind of wondering, like, Are we harder to change than maybe, are we less moldable?
Sure, you are, because you're older, and every year that we stack, we become more routine. We're just human beings. That's what humans do, right? We find a way to do it. We found our way, right? We found a way to merge on the freeway. That's our way. By the age of 50, we already found it. I don't need to find it. I don't care what you told me. Unless you can really prove to me there's a better way, I'm not doing it. We found our ways. We're just more stuck in our ways. Now, can we change? 100%. I've worked, you know, and the younger crowd, that was more, you know, strategic from a standpoint of wanting to engage the audience that's most open to this message. But now the people that I've mostly worked with have been, you know, people that are longer in the tooth than a lot of those folks. And I think that, again, what you're poking at here is essentially the theory of change that they talk about in readiness for change. And it's something that I implement not only in my work with the athletes, but also in the foundation. And it's this idea that we go through stages of becoming ready to change. And so I cannot, because I'm going to give everything to you. And from that commitment standpoint, you're right to note that. Like, my kids are raised on this belief, we don't quit. We just don't give up. You know, like, it's just the one thing, that and loving God and some of those principles. Like, there's really not a whole lot else I'm really, like, firm on. But it's like, we don't quit. We don't give up. And I think when you look at stages of change, if someone in their 60s or 70s or 80s, if they're at a moment where it's really their moment, and they've had enough with whatever it is, they can change 100%, just as much as the young person. But yeah, I think it becomes more challenging just because we get in our way more. Mm-hmm. We prevent the change more. We become more rigid, more closed off, more set in our ways, more cranky the older we get. I mean, of course, we're trying to do everything we can to avoid that, but that's the reality. So if we're humble and we're honest with ourselves, change is possible at any age. We do have to want it. We do have to put in the work. And the goal is that if I can find someone that's ready to do the work and they're committed, I don't need them to see how. I'm the reason. That's how I look at it. I'm like, look, that is my job. Your job is just to show up, do the work, and be willing to be open to the work. If you know this is your moment and you're ready to change and take it to the next level, whatever that change is for you or heal or whatever it is, you can absolutely do it. But I can't want it more. And early in my career, I'll tell you, I had to learn that lesson the hard way because I was at the early parts of my career, I was going into really hopeless situations here in Sacramento, doing community mental health, going into homes to do therapy in South Sacramento, North Highlands, you know, with folks that are gang affiliated, all those things. And I saw a lot of people change. They wanted it way more than I wanted it for them. I tried to make a lot of people change. They didn't want it. They weren't ready. They were not at that place. And so what they needed from me was probably just to walk with them in that pre-contemplation. But where I'm at now in my career, I'm afforded the luxury of saying, I know the best in me comes out when I team up, partner with someone else that's driven, that has the desire right now to change. If you put me in front of that person, we're going to do some amazing things together. We will not be stopped until we reach our destination. Because I tell them too, like I said this to the Titans rookies when I was there last time. I said, look, man, I didn't play football like you guys. You know, I played a little bit in high school, whatnot, like whatever. I'm not pretending to know the game, but I'll tell you one thing. I promise you this. I am a dog. I am a dog in a way that I might even be more of a dog than you, right? That's who I am. As much as I'm love, I also got this dog to me. And so when I get someone that's ready to go two dogs teaming up, and then I get to pour into you, I get to bring out all the things I see in you, all the greatness I see in you, and pull that out daily, man, that's fun. Because we're going to do some amazing things together. Mainly, you're going to do it. I'm just going to witness it, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
Interesting. So I feel like I'm a little bit of a dog too. But one of the things I've seen,
I know you are, man. Yeah, you don't get here without. It's because again, to your point, like I'm sorry, just on this point,
no problem.
Like when you're at the bottom of the mountain because you just climbed the one and you're back and you're deciding whether or not to climb another mountain or not, it's that certain when that dog is awakened, you then go do something that if you surveyed 100 people around you, probably like 5 would actually say they see. Now, maybe 95 say they believe you can do it, but they can't see it. You see it. You have to be a dog. You have to be relentless. You have to be filled with a certain level of faith that others don't have in order to truly commit to seeing that vision through. That's what every entrepreneur, anyone driven, anyone successful, you don't get to this place without having a certain level of dog to you. And I think even owning that and knowing that, it's fun even just to kind of be like, that's right, I am a dog. Like, what if I tapped into my dog even more? What if I brought him out even more? That becomes this new level.
Well, one of the interesting things too, you know, you're 20 years behind me, so you don't know this firsthand yet, but you start declining. You may know this because you're a doctor, but we start declining, I don't know, at 50 or 60. At some point, you're just not as good at certain stuff, right? Athletically, for sure, that starts happening in your mid-30s or something, but you start getting worse at stuff, maybe how fast you pick up tech, how, you know, just certain things that maybe came a little bit easier for you when you were, you know, 40 or even 50 is a little bit different at 60. But what I've been having this discussion with my CFO downstairs, and he's a couple years younger than me, but one of the things that I think is happening for me, and so this is maybe saying this for the audience that might be a lot younger, you get better at certain things, though. Even though you're sucking more or getting worse at certain things, you're getting a little bit better at synthesizing concepts, potentially, or even articulating your point of view. There are things that we get better at that when we get older that you don't even realize, so you can kind of pivot from being the dog at, oh, I was always the guy with good with numbers and fast and good with tech and stuff. It's like, you can kind of find your strengths that might lie elsewhere and be a dog at that.
It's funny, as you're saying that, like right towards the tail end, I agree with everything. I'm thinking of my grandfather who passed away right at the beginning, right as COVID was happening, not COVID related, but you know, man, like that's his life. Cause he was a civil engineer. And I mean, he was a civil engineer long before I was born. I feel like he retired way before I was born. I never knew that he was a civil engineer. I just knew he was always doing something, and his brand was going to be that whatever he brought, if he showed up, you knew what you were getting. You knew every single time it's going to be consistent. He's going to bring the best, excellence, no stone left unturned. A lot of, you know, that dog in me comes from witnessing that, getting drug alongside him to all those different times. Here, grab a shovel, do this, cut the tree down, all whatever it was. And I think that's the thing too, is like, that's the beauty of that, is like, we possess the dog. The seasons of life may change, right? Our cognition was different when we were 13 and what we had to offer the world. We may have been a dog though at 13 with all that athletic ability, right? Out there taking the world on. Now at 68, 88, I don't know. It looks different, but we still have the dog. It's just about seasons of life. As they change, our roles change. You know, I believe that when I talk about purpose and calling, your purpose is your through line. I'm always going to be helping people. Now, to your point, I might not be able to help people the same way in 20 years, but I know that I'm still going to find a way to help people. And the way that I'll do it, whether it's mentoring at that point or scaling, whatever it is.
You're going to have 1,000 of you by that point. So you'll be, driving this.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's going to look different, but
maybe more than 1,000. The brand, I don't undersell it.
Yeah, no. the brand is going to be the same. It's going to be the same tenacity, the same passion, the same love, the same, all the things that you saw before. And I do feel like this is a limitation we have. You know, I am very much a fan of capitalism and in the Western world, and I preface that all to say, but I think that part of the issue we have here too is that, you know, our society, whether we agree with it or not, it's just an observation. The older you get, the less value you provide to the machine, right? You no longer become much of a moneymaker, a producer. It's kind of like, well, then when you're not a producer, what are you? You're a drain. And I think that that's a lot of the message that when I've sat with older people that they've internalized in their most honest moments, they feel like they're just waiting to die. We have not done a good enough job cherishing. We look at every culture. We're the only ones that do it. We tell all of our, you know, our loved ones to go die alone, and we feel okay with that. We justify that. We rationalize that. But it goes further than that. You know, when we get to a certain age where maybe we're not in our prime as much, oh my God, you know how to get on the freeway the most efficient way. You know how to, all the things. You are wise. You have wisdom. We haven't figured out probably, you know, how to commoditize that.
Yeah.
But the reality is that we all have something to give. Those gifts don't stop being usable. The purpose doesn't stop just because we entered a new season of life. To your point, it's more about figuring out, okay, in this season, what parts of me are meant to grow? I mean, I know as a father now to a five-year-old daughter, Isabella, Antonio's getting ready to turn 7, that my helping looks different, right? Like I can't help the world. I tried that the first, 5 years of Antonio's life. I tried to help the whole world and be there to be the best dad I could be for them and be a husband and do all these things. Yo, that is not possible. So I have to, in this season, go, that's okay. Because in this season, if I spend time really nurturing the relationship with those two at home and my wife, that it's actually setting me up for the next season. It may not look the same. So seasons of life bring on the opportunity to use different parts of ourselves or different skill sets, but we are the through line because our purpose is a through line. And as long as we got breath, we got purpose.
I love it. Okay. So I'll ask one last question. And then if anything else that I should have asked, maybe you can kind of fill in any gaps that I didn't cover, but is Tannehill going to take the Titans to the Super Bowl even possible?
I'll tell you what, look, there are a couple things, you know, Ryan's my guy. I got to say that. I love Ryan. Ryan's an amazing human being. Yeah, absolutely. What Ryan needs, and I don't think this is saying anything he probably would disagree with, but what Ryan needs around him is health and consistency. And Ryan is not going to tell you he's Patrick Mahomes. You know, Patrick Mahomes can be on a team with a poor offensive line and a lack of a running game and no balance and find a way to still win, right? Because he's Patrick Mahomes. Josh Allen's another quarterback like that. Ryan Tannehill, I don't think he would tell you that he's either of those guys.
He's surgical, though. He knows how to – I mean, he's a good quarterback.
That's it. So he can manage an offense. And the thing is, and, you know, on the Titans, to your point, will Tannehill do it? I think I wouldn't put anything past the dog that is Mike Vrabel. I have so much respect for Mike Vrabel. You know, this is a guy that's technically – you know, in many ways, I guess I'm a contractor there, but he's kind of like my boss, you know, and, and, you know, I've gotten chewed out just like anyone else has by Mike Vrabel and also praised in front of rooms by Mike Vrabel. But I would not put any, that's a guy I'm betting on. That's why I'm here, man. Like, I don't want to work with teams really, but I want to work for that team. I want to work with that guy because he's a dog, because I selfishly get better every day I'm in there, not just from learning from him, but being held accountable to that culture. So all that's to say, I'm not putting anything past a Mike Vrabel coach team. And the thing that he didn't have last year, Ryan, he didn't have health on his offensive line. We lost Taylor Lewan early in the year. We have a revamped offensive line. We also have youth at the receiving position. That's going to be the biggest question mark, but I think there's talent there. And if that happens and the defense plays okay, Mike Vrabel showed you 2 years ago they had the best record in the AFC when everyone thought they wouldn't win the division. Anything's possible with Mike Vrabel.
Well, in a perfect world, Brock Purdy is healthy. Tannehill's healthy. Go. They face each other in the Super
Bowl. There you go. And then someone's going to win.
Yeah. All right. What did I not ask you? Anything else you want to say?
Well, no. I mean, coming here, the things – The local stuff, you know, like coming here, I saw when I walked in here, I can't remember the exact way you put it, but something about like relentlessly local. Is that
relentlessly local? Yeah, that's okay. my investing strategy.
Yeah. There you go.
Yes.
Yeah. But also, too, just like that seems to be your brand of who you are as a person. Mm-hmm. Right. Even having me here today as well. And I don't know. I think about local stuff coming here, too, you know, and just. My career started here, not only as a therapist, but also as a sports broadcaster when I was a kid. And, you know, every time I come back here, I think about that. But I also think about, too, with the fact that the show is so relentlessly local, just that what we have is so special here in this area about how much we, as the kids would say, put on for one another, as much as we root for each other, as much as we collaborate with one another. It's a very communal vibe in this city, and that's thanks again to those with success have chosen to, in this city like yourself, to look at the impact of how they can impact others. And I don't know why. I think it's because we all feel like we got a chip on our shoulder. I think it's whenever Phil Jackson called us Cowtown that yeah. we feel like we're always overlooked and understated. And that's the beauty, is that I don't care what industry you're in. I don't care what kind of music you make. If you're from Sacramento, I'm telling everyone about you, you know, and if you're young and you're gifted and you're driven, I'm mentoring you. Like, I don't care, man. I don't care. I'm giving you whatever I have because you're from Sacramento. You're from Roseville. You're from the areas around here. And I just, there's something really unique. And so, yeah, I mean, that's the only other thing we haven't touched a lot on is just how important Sacramento and Roseville and this area is to me. And I know it is to you. And I want to keep seeing all of us win. And I feel like, you know, that's the thing. Like, to be honest with you, I don't want to be Dr. Phil. Like, promise you that. I don't know who does want to be Dr. Phil. I'm sorry. That sounds terrible if you are Dr. Phil.
Dr. Phil.
Maybe Dr. Phil wants to be Dr. Yeah, I don't even I'm know sure if he wants to be Dr. Phil anymore at this point. Point is, I don't want to be Dr. Phil. To be honest with you, I don't want to have 1,000 disciples. I don't want any of that. But I just want to make an impact. And the only thing that I really want to do, too, is also let people know where I'm from. I'm from Sacramento, California, man, where some of the most brilliant minds, the most creative talents, the greatest business minds, we're here. And if you don't know about us now, you're about to find out. And that's you know, I think about local and I think about coming here. I think about that a lot, just the pride I have And that's why I'll support anything you do. I'll support anything anyone does in this region, because this is about Sacramento.
Drop the mic, Dr. Mondo.
Man.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
Now, let's get Mark's perspective and closing thoughts from today's show. We're back to the Marquee Media Studio. It's the Mark Haney Show.
Great show today. Dr. Mondo sharing the story. Great guy, and he happens to be from my high school, so proud to have Dr. Mondo on the show today. And to all you out there that are trying to figure it out, trying to stay sane through this brutal battle of entrepreneurship, you know what? We salute you here at Haney Biz. For all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship, and for all you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. We're never above you. We're never below you. We're always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.